It's 5:49. This is All Things Considered on Vermont Public Radio. I'm Neil Charnoff with VPR News. Vermont is set to become the first state in the country to require the labeling of most food products that contain genetically modified ingredients. As VPR's Bob Kinzel reports, the legislature gave its final approval to the bill this afternoon, and Governor Peter Shumlin says he will sign it.
What sets the Vermont bill apart from GMO labeling laws in several other states is that there are no triggers before it becomes law. Laws passed in Maine and Connecticut don't go into effect until a number of other states have passed similar bills. The Vermont legislation simply states that the labeling requirements must start on July 1st of 2016. The House and Senate passed slightly different versions of this bill, and House members voted to accept the Senate approach. The final bill includes a legal defense fund if the state is sued by any of the nation's major food processors. Attorney General Bill Sorrell says it's very likely there will be a lawsuit. Sorrell says the cost of defending the law will be roughly $1.5 million, and the state could face legal fees totaling as much as $8 million if it loses the final court case. The defense fund will be financed with settlement money received by the Attorney General's office, and the fund will also accept contributions. Barnard Representative T.O. Shagar told his colleagues that the House Agriculture Committee strongly supported the Senate bill.
This bill has been re-engineered to be more resistant to legal challenge and yield a high level of approval among the overwhelming majority of our constituents who have demanded the right to know what's in the food they're being sold.
Governor Peter Shumlin also describes the bill as a consumer right-to-know issue, and he says he'll definitely sign it.
We want Vermonters to know what's in their food. They have a right to know what they're eating, what they're buying, but also didn't chicken out by saying, you know, we're going to wait for 20 or 30 other states to get this done. We're doing it. We're leading. Vermont's led on a lot of important issues, and I suspect we'll see this spread around the country.
Attorney General Sorrell says defending the law poses some legal challenges for the state. He says the issue facing the court is whether the health and safety concerns with GMO products outweigh the First Amendment rights of the food processors. He says when Vermont was sued over its mercury labeling law, the court said the labeling was justified. But in the case of the bovine growth hormone labeling law, the court ruled against the state.
Is this more of a mercury case or more of a bovine growth hormone case? And to the extent that the jury's out on whether GMOs are in fact harmful for human consumption, our case will be much more challenging.
The legislation exempts dairy and meat products from the labeling requirements because backers of the bill are concerned that including these products would be in violation of federal preemption laws. For VPR News, I'm Bob Kinzel in Montpelier.
Attorney General Sorrell says the state is cracking down on the growing problem of illegal online lending. Sorrell says lenders are taking advantage of thousands of low- and moderate-income Vermonters by offering illegal short-term high-interest loans over the Internet. He says the loans, with an average interest of 300%, are designed to entrap consumers in long-term debt. But Sorrell said today that Vermont has strict lending laws to fight such schemes. And he said settlements with the top three largest known lenders and one payment processor have resulted in at least $1 million in potential refunds and loan forgiveness to over 1,600 eligible Vermont consumers. A new report from a child advocacy group called Building Bright Futures shows that many of Vermont's children are not ready to start school. The findings come as legislation to mandate pre-kindergarten statewide has apparently stalled in the Vermont Senate. VPR's Charlotte Albright reports.
Vermont has earned kudos as a good place to raise children, but according to a report out this week from the nonprofit group Building Bright Futures, poverty is creeping into the middle class. Executive Director Julie Coffey cites data showing that the average Vermont household with two working parents and two children is stretched financially, yet most do not qualify for child care assistance, and that has created a growing class of children who enter school at a disadvantage.
You know, due to trauma or lack of nutrition or lack of stimulation, or they're not getting what they need, and they don't have a fair shot. And that kind of smacks of a civil rights issue.
Kindergarten teachers surveyed for the report last year said that 38% of Vermont's children were not ready for kindergarten. But Coffey says brand new statistics published by the Agency of Education just this week, after the report went to print, show that a whopping 54% do not have the social, physical, emotional, language, and cognitive skills they need to start school.
For me, it is incredibly alarming, and it is bordering on a crisis.
So Coffey is disappointed that the legislature has not yet approved a bill that would require public schools to offer at least 10 hours of pre-kindergarten per week. She says since most local districts have already started preschool programs or partnered with early child care providers, the price tag of the legislation is modest. But even if that bill does not pass, she says a $37 million federal grant designed to raise standards and improve training for early childhood educators will create better opportunities for children whose parents cannot afford high-quality private daycare. According to a source cited in the Building Bright Futures report, without high-quality early childhood education, children are 50% more likely to be placed in special education, a costly alternative. The same research shows that 70% are more likely to be arrested than kids who get good schooling early in life. On Friday, a group of business leaders and other child advocates is expected to launch a major campaign to raise awareness of the challenges facing Vermont's youngest children. For VPR News, I'm Charlotte Albright.
And finally this evening, Governor Shumlin is honoring the 19 Olympians with ties to Vermont who competed at the Sochi Olympics. Shumlin hosted five of them at a statehouse ceremony today. He told the athletes that he and the state are proud of them. It's All Things Considered on Vermont Public Radio. Commentator Annie Guyon recently engaged in that parent-child ritual known as the college tour, but is having some second thoughts.
My eldest child is a high school junior, and I have officially joined the ranks of parents immersed in and overwhelmed by the college search process. My first goal was to simply show my son that anything is possible. The classic "world is your oyster" message. But I might have gone a little over the top. Recently, I took him and his best buddy to California, where we used to live, and toured five colleges in 5 days on a 700-mile road trip, staying with friends and family. We looked at a few UCs, Cal Polytech, and Stanford. It was a great trip, and he described nearly all the schools as chill, which is high praise. But after all the planning and feeling like a rock star parent, somewhere between San Francisco and Santa Barbara, it hit me. I don't want my kids moving 3,000 miles away. What was I thinking? On the long drive down the coast, while the boys played DJ, snoozed, and gazed at the Pacific, I figured it out. I was doing what my parents hadn't. My mom and dad grew up in tiny villages in England, left school early to work, lived through World War II, immigrated, and just struggled to pay the bills. They never considered our family to be college material. They not only didn't help me go to college, they discouraged it. Mom advised me to be a secretary and get married, pointedly demanding to know who did I think I was. Since we lived in Palo Alto right next to Stanford University, where my granddad was a gardener, her words cut to the core of my then-budding intellectual self. What she didn't know, and what I didn't either back then, is that when I set my sights on something, I become tenacious. Though it took a while to afford tuition, at the ripe old age of 22, I enrolled at San Francisco State University. Working two jobs, after 9 years of attending part-time, I eventually earned a BA in art history, even graduating cum laude. It was a dream come true, and I was headhunted by a top gallery right after getting my degree. But it was a late start in the professional world. I made a promise to myself that if I ever had kids, I'd do all I could to help them get to college. So this trip was as much about keeping this promise to myself as it was about simply trying to be a supportive parent. My main goal was just to plant the seed of possibility in my son's mind, and I think on that count I succeeded. During the flight on the way back, he asked, "So if I got a BA at a more low-key college, could I still go to grad school at, like, Stanford? Yes, I replied, trying to contain my nearly volcanic inner joy. Yes, you can.